Hi, this is the Attention Please Podcast, episode 33, right here on Talking Stuff Network. We are recording this on 24th March 2019. We were off last week and received so many messages protesting our little break. But guys, even Great Bong needs to recharge his creative fluids once in a while. And today, he has a whole bunch of things to talk to you about. So Arnab, if the number of topics you have for us today is any indicator, the break seems to have re-energized you completely.
Well, the break wasn't really just for my re-energizing. There were two reasons why I had to take a break. One was it was a tax filing season and I had to do my taxes. And the only time I can do it is during the weekends. That was one reason. And second reason was that I was also on another podcast called 81 Not Out. So my podcast time for the week was taken by appearing on that podcast where we discussed some of our predictions for the IPL. So that was, I hadn't really taken break from podcasting itself. I had more appropriately taken a break from this podcast. But yes, the fact is it's overwhelming to first of all hear that this podcast makes a difference that you actually want to hear. As I've said multiple times before, for any content creator, whether he be doing a podcast or writing a book, you know, criticism isn't the problem, but indifference is. That's the real enemy. When people just don't care what you say, it's not a question of, you know, people loving it. Of course, I want people to love my opinions and love my podcast and love me, but I'm okay with hatred too, as long as there is no indifference. That's the main problem.
We had one person on WhatsApp saying that this podcast should be brought under ESMA, that's Essential Services Maintenance Act. I found that really funny.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for those words of appreciation. Again, in Bengali, there is a phrase which says you never really appreciate your teeth till the day they're gone. So we tend to appreciate things when they're not here. But fortunately, I'm not gone. I'm back. And hope to be a regular from now on till something like the tax season, something that I don't particularly look forward to doing, kind of impinges on my time. So without much ado, let's start with the first topic that I wanted to talk about today, which was LK Advani finally retiring. Or I read somewhere that it was LK Advani who had, you know, had asked them not to not to give him the seat. I'll take that with more than a pinch of salt. And basically, the guy was 92 years old. I think that there should not be any controversy. I know that the average age of Indian politicians is way skewed to the right than it, way more skewed to the right than it should be, representing that they do a very young population. But let's draw the line at 85. This is the only profession, I guess, in India where life actually begins at 60. So, but 92 is really pushing it. And for those, and it was fairly obvious for the last 10 years or so that there was a problem with Advani and the present BJP leadership. And this was really the proverbial final nail in the coffin. It should not have been surprising. And honestly, we should not even be having this conversation. Somebody at 92 should not be allowed to run for office. Because being an MP requires a certain level of physical and mental fitness that we should not expect people who are 92, even exceptional people at 92, to have. But just to talk about the legacy of LK Advani, I mean, I'd written a short story which was about this rock star engineer, which was a metaphor for LK Advani. So for those of you who haven't read the blog post, it kind of goes like this. So once upon a time, two people decided to start a company. And the market at that point of time was dominated by a family held company, which basically owned the market. There was no other player. So they went in, there was the big ideas guy, and then there was the rock star engineer. Now this is the way actually great startups get made. In Apple, there was Woz and Jobs. So this is not uncommon that there are two people. One is the person who has the big ideas, and then there's the guy who does the implementation. I mean, he actually sits down and codes and actually gets the product together. So Advani was really that rock star engineer. He's the guy who actually put in the hard yards for the BJP and took them from 2 seats to 84 seats. It's a remarkable achievement. And slowly, both him and I'm kind of dropping the pretense of this of the metaphor at this point of time, that they built up this party, basically. And then what happened was, as it happens in any company, they start hiring people with the expectation that they will do the grunge work and we will do the fun job. And over the years, after, you know, it was expected that Advani would take over from Vajpayee, and he did. So, but he suffered from a problem that many rock star engineers suffer from when they're sometimes given leadership positions. You just look at Sachin Tendulkar and when he was the captain. So even if you're very good at what you do, it does not necessarily translate for you to become the numero uno leader. I think Sachin is a big example, and Advani is another. So why did Advani fail? Well, there were many reasons, but I think one of the reasons why he failed was when he took over the party, he tried to play the political game using the rules of the Congress. There was nothing to distinguish over in his Advani years. There was nothing to distinguish the BJP from the Congress. And true, he sometimes brought up the Mandir, but, you know, bringing up the Mandir from 1980s still, it was not in a certain context. He was bringing it up like, you know, like Kumar Sanu brings out his old 90s songs when he does a concert. And it's not going to be the same reaction when you did it in the 90s and when you do it today. The audience has changed. And L.K. Advani somehow was never able to capture that. He was never able to move on from what he had created. So for some time, he tried to pivot to this liberal avatar. He realized that he was possibly seen as too extreme Hindu right wing. And so he tried to pivot in a bizarre way by somehow fetishizing Jinnah in Pakistan. And this was a true failure in his leadership. And while he was failing as a leader, there were other people like Modi and Amit Shah who he had brought into the party. And so he kind of felt, it was fairly obvious that he kind of felt that they owed him in a way, that they should stand aside while he is the leader, and they should not aspire to become, take his position, which is obviously an unreal expectation. Because unlike Advani, whether you like Modi or not, there is no doubt that Modi is a leader in the sense that Modi has his own fan base. Advani, I don't think, ever really had a fan base in the way Vajpayee had or in the way Modi has. And I think as Advani's political career finally ends, I think the most sobering realization is that his resentment, I believe, came not so much from not being the prime minister, I think that's part of it, or not being the president. But I think from his realization, I think he realized it, that he never commanded the kind of love and respect. And again, you might feel that that's unwarranted, but the love and respect that Vajpayee had and then Modi had. And this often happens to rock star engineers, where they look back at their legacy and they say, look, I built this company. You know, everything that they do, all their technology and everything, I thought of it. How come then that other people are taking the credit? How come that people seem to gravitate towards these other people who don't have my knowledge, who don't have my level of achievement? And this is a point of enduring frustration to many rock star engineers as they wind up their career. And sometimes they wind up their career nicely, and sometimes they're led out by HR. Because they just don't realize that they were good at something, but leadership is something which is totally different. It is a matter of likability. It's a matter of who do people want to listen to. It does not come from your rank or role. It comes from whether people like you. And there's also a correlation between, you know, people who are very productive and your likability. I've seen that they're usually negatively correlated. So there is, as an engineer myself, I can kind of feel the tragedy of Advani in a very personal way, and it sounds kind of bizarre me saying it like this, but it was always inevitable. I don't think Advani was ever built to be a number one leadership. He just didn't have it in him. So that will always remain his tragedy. So to talk about leadership and, you know, how some people can win and how some people just can't should be worthy considering today's match between RCB and CSK. So before the tournament began, when the auctions were done, and even on the 81 Not Out podcast, I had said that I personally don't see this Chennai team going to the top four. And of course, after seeing them perform today, I'm having second thoughts. I already have a little bit of egg on my face, because it just doesn't make cricketing sense that a team where the average age, I don't know what the average age actually is. They do have a few young players, but most of their star players...
They mentioned the 32 yesterday.
32, okay. And they, I mean, if you look at the stars today, Harbhajan, Imran Tahir, they're impossibly old men in cricket. I mean, these people should not have any business taking to a cricket field. They should all be in the commentary box, but they all play. And then there was also Shane Watson. And I still believe that they will not be able to. And again, I will be proved wrong, but this doesn't... This is against the laws of physics and biology that they will be able to sustain a 5-week tournament. I don't know how many, 5-6 weeks tournament. And that ultimately their performance will fall away because they just won't be able to keep the physical intensity that's needed to play cricket every 2 days over this period of time, even though it's 40 overs. But just the way they started against a much fitter team, against a team which has been continuously reconstituted. And you could see the difference between Kohli, who's the rock star engineer, who's at the height of his career, who's at the pinnacle of his powers, kind of failing to be a leader. And this is so subtle sometimes, you know, the way he got out. There was just one guy standing there. There was Jadeja, who was in long on. And somehow on a day where it needed him to bat through, it was a difficult pitch. It was I would say, a disgrace for a T20 game, for people who actually pay and go see a game, to see that kind of a test match pitch. It's a good test match pitch. It might be even a good one-day pitch, but this is not a good T20 pitch. A T20 pitch has to have like 150, 160 runs in it, and there was no way any team would ever get 150 or 160 on that pitch. But again, it was just the fact that this was the series opener. These are certain moments, and these are very difficult to define, but leaders have to stand up and take those moments. Those moments just don't come every day. So you have to stand up and really go for the ball. And Kohli had a chance. He had a chance to set the tone and tenor of the season for Bangalore, a team which has consistently struggled because of the lack of leadership, I would say. And yet he failed. He failed miserably today. And you could see... You just could see in his face versus the face of Dhoni, who seemed to be enjoying it absolutely. I mean, I think Dhoni really, really loves playing against Kohli because he himself knows the difference in leadership abilities. And while Dhoni looked relaxed and always in control from ball one, Kohli looked antsy, fidgety, angry from the first ball. And this is, again, we started off with leadership and Advani. This is the difference between a leader and a non-leader. Even though I would say, of course, if you just look at cricketing abilities, I mean, Dhoni is of course a very good cricketer, but he's nowhere in the class of Virat Kohli when it comes to raw cricketing ability. There's very few people who I've seen who have the capability that Virat Kohli has. And yet, almost like Sachin, perhaps his record is better than Sachin because he has a better team. He has consistently had a better team than Sachin. So his record is also better. But I also feel that as a leader, Kohli leaves a lot to be desired. Moving on to the next topic. So over the last few days, there were some horrific incidents of violence on minorities in Pakistan. Now, this should come as no surprise. For those who follow the history of the subcontinent. And again, my point here is not so much what's happened in Pakistan, but how we kind of follow events in Pakistan. So the moment I made this tweet, that I want to see how Pakistani civil society reacts to this. You know, do they start giving away their awards? Do Pakistani media people start writing in Washington Post as to what a terrible country their country is? Do they do that? And I was told on Twitter, and this was a reaction that I was expecting, was, should we set ourselves to Pakistan standards? Now, first of all, this is a classic liberal move, and it's the bigotry of low expectation. And in this case, it's not even that. We have been recently holding Pakistan as a standard. And this was what I was surprised, and not in a good way, when we had the aftermath of the Pulwama incident. Because we saw so many in India actually challenge our own prime minister and believe what the Pakistani prime minister was saying, even though no side could conclusively prove any facts. And that Pakistan did not allow non-Pakistan controlled media at the site of the apparent tree bombing. So if it was just trees, why would they not do it? Even though there was no proof, and I will say that the proof provided by both sides was insufficiently solid to have a definitive narrative as to what happened. People in India, mind you, people in Pakistan did not believe India, but people in India chose to believe Pakistan. So in a way, we do hold Pakistan. We don't hold ourselves to a different standard than Pakistan. We actually hold Pakistan to a higher standard. We think Pakistan is better than us, that Imran Khan is a better prime minister than Narendra Modi. Well, then why is there such... Nobody's criticizing Imran Khan, as far as I know, at this point of time. Imagine if something like this had happened in India. Pakistan would be criticizing Modi. Indians would be criticizing Modi. See, that's the difference. And the fact that this is important, the fact that the huge sections of the Indian media chose to buy the Pakistani story has made it for future. They have solidified the fact that India bombed some trees. Now it's not, nobody cares as to whether we bombed trees or whether we hit a terrorist training camp. By accepting the Pakistani narrative, India has made it a fact that we hit some trees and that we are lying. And that's why when you look at Hasan Minhaj's show, he does not even bring into... He tries to be balanced. I saw it was not as outrageous as I thought it would be. He does try to balance things, but he basically accepts as a truth that India is making this up. And I can't blame him, because our Indian media, our Indian politicians, Congress has consistently taken the Pakistani side rather than our own, because they hate Modi so much that they're willing to lionize the Pakistani prime minister if it helps them to prove a point. Which brings me back to Advani and Jinnah. See, that was Advani's biggest problem, that his hatred of Mahatma Gandhi and Congress, which of course he inherits from his RSS days, had so blinded him that he thought nothing of praising Jinnah, a man who directly triggered Direct Action Day and the Great Calcutta Killing. Now, this is what intense hatred does to you. That it makes you say just crazy, insane things. Now, I understand that kind of got him a lot of brownie points from Indian liberals, and it kind of washed away some of his Babri sins, because nobody really mentions that anymore. Somehow Modi is the nowadays the most right-wing and terrible prime minister we have ever had, or BJP leader. But everything that Advani did, which was essentially ride a rath through a communally sensitive states, making provocative statements, and then ultimately standing and pulling down the disputed structure, those things have kind of been washed away. It was washed away after 2002. And a part of that washing away was Advani's more liberal shift at the end of his career, which again, as I said, as part of his, if his goal, of his objective was to become the prime minister and the leader of the BJP, that was the wrong approach for him to take. But it definitely, as a person, maybe it got him a lot more friends. Which brings me to the point that I had made earlier in the podcast, is that the problem with Advani, unlike Modi, was that he wanted to play the game as defined by the Lutyens circle. He wanted to basically be accepted by them. He found it difficult to be accepted by his core after some time, unlike Advani. And Advani was somebody, Vajpayee was somewhat unique in the sense that he could both appeal to
the perfume classes as well as he could appeal to people. That was his uniqueness. And not everybody has that touch. And again, Advani doesn't have that touch. And Kohli doesn't have that touch on the larger context of leadership. Which moves me to the next topic that I wanted to talk about, which was the state whose elections I personally love to follow because I come from that state. And that is the lovely state of Bengal. So the Trinamool Congress, so Bengal is one of the few places where politics and B-moviedom come together perfectly, forming a deadly 1-2 for those of you who know me for the things which I like. So this time, Mamata Banerjee, who is, by the way, for those of you who don't know, Mamata Banerjee is absolutely celebrity obsessed. She loves to get her picture taken with celebrities, whether it be Shah Rukh Khan, whoever it is. And Calcutta has now been converted into this, and I think it was Buddhadev who called it, where to use the term, this hujug.
Hujug.
Which is this one event after another. And each of those events usually has Mamata Banerjee in a very prominent position, flanked by celebrities of different hues. Sometimes it could be, if you remember the what they did after Kolkata won the IPL. She loves celebrities. So that's one thing. But this time they have fielded, like last time for elections, they got Munmun Sen. Which if you have any respect for politics, this is... you would immediately start laughing for Munmun Sen, because Munmun Sen is somebody who's represented classically over the ages as someone who's least interested in anything of any seriousness. And she was made the MP of Bakura, which she, I think, visited 5 times in 5 years. She was least interested in being an MP. And this time, Mamata Banerjee has decided to double down by not only nominating her, but also nominating a slew of other very young, very, very young actresses. Two of the names, this might not make sense for those of a pan-Indian audience, but Mimi Chakravarti and Nusrat Jahan, who are like moderately successful heroines. Like, they're major heroines at the peak of their career right now. And then there is this another Bengali hero called Deb, who's also very active in making movies. So the problem with this, and people will say, what is the problem with people in movies going into politics? No, there is no problem with people in movies going into politics. And some of India's most influential politicians have become aware from the movies. And it makes sense because they come with a support base like MGR, NTR, Jayalalitha. But the thing with them was they were not doing movies as well as doing politics. See, that's the problem. I have no problem with somebody like Rupa Ganguly, who was an actress once, getting into politics because, she doesn't do any acting anymore, whether it be on from her own choice or whether it be just nobody gives her acting assignments, whatever it is. Somebody is free to move on to other things. And actors, given the fact that they already have a support base, it makes sense for them to become politicians. I'm not knocking actors becoming politicians. They have every right to become politicians. It's like everybody else. But it's when you have a number of politicians who are actors and who are pretty much at the height of their career. So they have a lot of other things to do, and which they are going to do, by the way. They are not going to not do them in favor of politics. So this is where I have a problem. What Mamata Banerjee is doing is essentially he is putting up a number of ciphers. So these people have no opinions. They have no ideologies. They have no really political base. They draw their power purely from Didi, which means that they are not going to be poached by the BJP. And BJP has done, it has poached some of the more second string mass leaders that Mamata Banerjee had. A few of them have been poached. So what Mamata Banerjee is doing in response is, rather than introspect that why people are leaving TMC, or rather than change anything about her politics, she's basically putting up a number of ciphers who firstly she loves because they're celebrities, and second is because they will get people to the election rally. That's what she's concerned about. She's concerned about crowds. She's not concerned, the politics of it, the fact that an MP has certain responsibilities, certain politically, this is something which Mamata Banerjee scarcely cares about. As a matter of fact, she wants people like them who themselves have no political ambitions, who themselves know that they cannot have political ambitions without having the umbrella of the TMC. And just looking at the numbers, so the person who was this time, Tapas Pal, who got famous for a speech of his a few years ago, Tapas Pal is no longer running. The reason why is he's not particularly in the best of health. But at least with the case of Tapas Pal and Shatabdi Roy, Tapas Pal and Shatabdi Roy were not getting movies. These people are people who have kind of moved on. So it's okay for them to get into politics. But for people who are still making movies, it's terrible, really. So the final point that I wanted to talk about was, I don't know if you guys have any of you've seen this, there's this nice song which there's this comedy collective called Aisi Taisi Democracy, which I actually like them a lot, even though I don't agree with a lot of things they say, because they're politically not aligned with my politics, but I like them. I think they're very good. I think they say it in a nice way. They don't resort to the tried and tested tropes of, you know, Delhi versus Bombay and, you know, the same 10 topics that most Indian stand-up comics do. They're a little better than that. I think they stand apart. So I really like their content. So I saw this song which was being shared. They had composed a song as part of an advertisement for a tour that they were doing. They were playing, was it Raghuram, I think his name is. He was playing this song called Sawan Ka Mahina. It was kind of amusing. It's an old song, Sunil Dutt and Nutan, from a movie called Milan. And they had kind of modified the lyrics. And essentially the lyrics was, they were saying that, you know, everybody is a crook in Indian democracy. You know, some people are, again, they're obviously anti-nationalistic, which is really code for their anti-BJP. But at least in this song, they're saying that, you know, which side should we choose? They're all crooks. Everyone is a crook. So this is, and of course, when they sing this entire audience, which is made up of very elite South Mumbai types, are all, you know, over themselves laughing. I sometimes feel that they don't understand what they're laughing at, because there's a place where they say, you know, if you watch the song, you would know that Sunil Dutt is teaching Nutan how to sing, and sure, he sings Shore and Soar. So they make a joke on that, and most people laugh, but I don't think that they really got, because I don't think most people, looking at the age group there, I think they've seen the song. So they don't even know where that comes from. But again, I could be wrong. But the further point is that I see, when I look at that, I see a bunch of privileged, entitled people, and I count myself among them, essentially laughing at the futility of the Indian democratic system. And it's not something which I haven't done myself, but I don't think that's the right way to go about it. Because yes, the Indian democratic system with crooks all around might seem comical to people for whom democracy doesn't really, the Indian government doesn't really affect their daily lives. It doesn't affect their choice of whether they should have Vietnamese food today or go to a tapas bar. It doesn't affect them. So the Indian democracy or the government affects them only in terms of, oh, porn ko ban kar diya, or you know, a demonetization. That's when the government kind of, or having to get an Aadhaar card, which makes everybody mad. So these are the only times when the government kind of impinges on their life of privilege, on their bubble of privilege. Otherwise, they live in a place where who rules doesn't really matter. So they can make fun of everyone. It's as if that, you know, politics is essentially broken. Nobody can ever do it. Let's all laugh. And this is an extremely cynical and dangerous take on politics, because there, and you can see why it's dangerous, is because there will always be some people who will want to. It's true in a way. It's true because politics is dirty, but that doesn't mean that both sides or all sides are equally dirty. Some amount of being dirty is essential. You cannot be a politician and not be dirty. It's only the Indian privileged class which seems to not be able to comprehend this. The actual people, the people who actually vote, the people who are actually affected by the democratic system, they don't laugh at it. The people who need bijli, who need pani, they don't laugh at the electoral system. They don't consider it a joke. They don't consider political parties a joke because they depend. Their daily life is affected by the decisions of the people they elect. It might not be affected in the real way. You can say, well, nobody is giving me pani, nobody is giving me sarak. But it is affected in the sense of identity, that they feel that this person who is ruling us is from my family, is from my caste. They at least feel good about that. Now, you can say that he's being cheated by that. This is actually a way for the democratic system to cheat this guy out of his rights just by saying, you know, you and I, we share the same caste, so let me just exploit you, or we share the same religion. And that's fine. It's fine for people who have chosen to stay outside the system to laugh at it. But that also means that I can also criticize the fact that these people are laughing. And they're kind of making all sides sound that everybody is a crook. That's not essentially true. That not everybody is a crook. There is a, and this is difficult to explain, there is a level of crookiness, let's say, that you have to be if you're in politics. And if you don't accept that, then you get into this ARP syndrome, where you have a number of super privileged guys who decide that we are going to start a political party which is going to be absolutely honest. And so after 5 or 6 years, they all leave the party because they realize that that is not happening. Because there will always be one person, like an Arvind Kejriwal, who will take advantage of those people. But again, I don't think Arvind Kejriwal is the worst, or that he's... So Arvind Kejriwal, he maintains a base level of dishonesty that is essential for the political system. It's not just in India, it's everywhere. This is not something which is... This is inherent in any political system. In order to have elected representatives, in order to have elections, you need money. Where does the money come from? Whenever people are in power, they will make money. This is a business, nothing else. But it's serious business. Okay, nobody mocks business, even though there is some amount of dishonesty in it. Just like there's some amount of dishonesty in everything. Even those people who are laughing there, none of them are honest, I can claim. You know, many of them would be pirating music. Many of them would be doing different other things which would not be considered legal. So this is the sheer optics and I understand the way the middle class treats. And this is a kind of, you know, if you look at the way that Modi, coming back to Modi versus Imran Khan, one of it is the perfumed classes looking at Modi and saying, yeah, so bad, yaar, kitna uneducated hai, uska English kitna bura hai. Look at Imran Khan, such clipped Oxford accent, he's from Oxford. So this is again our whole perception that somebody in politics has to be either be very educated or has to have won a World Cup. And if they don't, we are willing to respect somebody from Pakistan higher than we decide to respect our own Prime Minister. And this is not a question of, you know, if you're against Modi or against the country. No, that's not what I'm saying. You have every right to be against Modi, you have every right to be against Rahul Gandhi. But you have to do some self-introspection if you choose to believe the lies that are coming from another country, when that country does not provide any evidence, because you believe that that politician who's saying those things just happens to be like us. See, that's what the people at the ICTC democracy crowd are laughing at. They're not so much laughing at the Indian democratic system, but they're laughing at the people who feel rule them, who are not like them, who are very different, who don't speak English well, who look uncouth and who talk uncouth. That's what they're laughing at. And again, I will consider that I have laughed at them too. So I will not keep myself separate and I will take the blame for that. But see, this is the problem with us, is that we fail to understand the way Indian democracy works, and we fail to understand the way the actual population of the country, the people who really depend on democracy, what this election means to them. For many of us, in cities and who are upper middle class, really upper middle class, everybody likes to call themselves middle class, people who are rich, let's say, we think of elections as a joke. It's either a joke or it's something like playing fantasy cricket. You know, we watch it with a kind of half seriousness. But it's not. For those people who are the most susceptible, for those people who actually depend on the democratic system, this is life and death. And it is not as if, and I'll come back to that, it's not that everybody is the same. There are differences. If you feel, so what's the difference? Well, look at the political candidates, there will always be, because we tend to think in terms of Modi versus Rahul Gandhi, but ultimately you're not voting for Modi versus Rahul Gandhi. You're voting for your local MP. Okay. So look at what your local MP has done or what he hasn't done. And I'm pretty sure if I look at that crowd, that South Mumbai crowd, then if I ask them, can you name your local MP? I'd be curious to see how many people can name their local MP. So that's the problem. The problem is when you laugh at the system and saying everybody's crooked, the fact is you're not participating in it. There are people who are actually participating in this democracy who don't find this funny. That doesn't mean that the politicians are less crooked, but it just means that they're more invested. They're more invested in the system. And that's why they get more out of the system also. The fact that first of all, I don't think that the Indian privileged class don't get a lot out of our democracy. They actually get a lot out of our democracy. Politicians don't come and make promises that will give you free water and all, but they do by default get a lot from our democracy. But they resent it. And that laughter that I saw that, and I reacted to that. Maybe I overreacted to it, but that whole thing of people laughing at the Indian, not so much at the Indian democratic system, maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but more at the different political parties and kind of putting them all in one bucket. And of course, the underlying tone is that BJP is the worst. That's always there. That's fine. Is that this is exactly the kind of patrician approach to politics that is anti-democratic. And yeah, that's about it for today.
Hey, yeah. So yeah, that's our podcast for today. And we've covered not just one or two or even three, but five topics. So trust Arnab to provide something for everyone. Let me also take a moment to plug our other podcast, What's Up Geeks. So if you don't really care much about tech, but you also want to make the most of your gadgets and tech, this is the podcast for you. So just look for What's Up Geeks in your podcast player or head over to anchor.fm/WUG. That's What's Up Geeks. So anchor.fm/WUG. Arnab, quick thing before we wrap up for today. The match today is going to be my team versus yours. Any call? By the time the podcast comes out, though, we'll know the result. So we've got Kolkata versus Hyderabad today.
So the problem, of course, Hyderabad is the better team. There is no doubt about it. From a pure cricketing perspective, it's a very, very well-rounded team. But I would still call for Kolkata because...
Home?
Because first of all, there's the home advantage. Second is, I'm not too sure about Warner's form.
That's worrying though.
Because Kane Williamson is not playing. If you recall last year,
yes.
You don't have Shikhar Dhawan. And you don't have Kane Williamson. So effectively, if let's say Warner goes for less than 10 runs, you're dependent on Manish Pandey at that point of time.
Yep.
So I think that Hyderabad does have a bowling attack which can defend any total that their batsmen put up. But if I go through the 11, the batting looks slightly weak. Because of the absence of Kane Williamson. And again, you'll possibly have Johnny Bairstow. Maybe, who knows? Johnny Bairstow played actually well in Calcutta. I once saw him play at Eden Garden. So maybe I'm not saying it's very bad, but it's not as good as it was last season, which was very, very solid. Where Kane Williamson was very solid last year. And he was always expected. And Warner has been solid in IPL. He's also an IPL star like Raina, but cricket is such a psychological game and he hasn't played the game for so long. I don't know if he will be able to hit the ground running. That's what I'm concerned about. That's what I think any SRH fan should be concerned about.
And isn't there also an over-reliance on foreign players for SRH? We don't have any Indian stars.
Yeah, they don't have. They you're right. They're in their batting, you know, Deepak Hooda and, you know, you're down to Yusuf Pathan, Deepak Hooda and... Yeah, I know you've started laughing. Deepak Hooda, Yusuf Pathan, and Yusuf Pathan will win you one game in the series. Now it could be.
Exactly what my friend told me yesterday. That every IPL is going to win you one match.
One game. So it would be the game tomorrow. But he'll obviously do nothing in the other games. But again, it fully depends on, of course, from Hyderabad side. You know how many David Warner scores and how. I don't think that if we get David Warner out cheaply or. I think that Calcutta are in with a chance. With the problem with Calcutta is I think everybody's fit, except of course our bowlers, so none of them are fit. But Calcutta, Eden Gardens, if all of them, I mean, if Lynn, Narayan, and Russell can get their bodies up and play, I think that on paper Calcutta looks stronger for the game tomorrow. Given that this is Warner's first game back. Five games later, I wouldn't be saying that.
So after yesterday's snooze fest, I hope that at least today's match is worthy of an IPL.
What a terrible game it was. What a terrible pitch it was for an IPL game. It's a horrible one.
Horrible one. Okay, so I think, yeah, let's wrap it up. And under 40 minutes, 5 topics and some ramblings. This one was an express. So we'll see you next week. Until then, thanks and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.